we're going to turn it right over to Winfried.
Thank you again for being the host here, or the lead instructor. So today, the instructor that's going to be doing the lesson is Andrew Burnett. And Andrew Burnett works with me here at the Crisco Rehabilitation Center. He is also blind. I'm going to go ahead and let him introduce himself and give you more background as to, you know, how he got to where he is today. And Drew's going to do indoor travel, cardinal directions, and things like that. So Drew Burnett, take it away.
Thank you all for having me. Like Winfried said, my name's Drew Burnett. I've been an O&M now for 8 or 9 years. In the past, I've been a dog user. I have a retired guide dog that now lives with me. I personally will not be getting another dog due to personal preferences. Like Winfried said, I'm also working here with him at the Chris Cole Center. Prior to coming here, I worked up around the Dallas-Fort Worth area in Texas. Had a wide range of different age groups that I'd work with, all sorts of different situations. The youngest that I've ever worked with was 3. The oldest I've ever worked with was 98. In particular, when it comes to O&M, the two areas that I really love focusing on in particular are general gross motor skills and fitness, but also technology. I'm married to a wonderful lady that met several years ago. She can see. We're a pretty good thing. Indoor travel. Indoor, I know, is where a lot of people will typically start off learning to travel. It's really kind of hard to cover all the stuff real in depth on it just because there's so much basic O&M skills and problem-solving strategies that come up just inside before you even get outside. Inside is where you typically work on really learning to build a mental map of what's around you, whether you can see nothing at all like me, or you do have some vision, that mental map really helps out. If any of y'all in here are not sure what I'm talking about when it comes to a mental map, the easiest way I'd like to explain it to most people, they're pretty used to getting up in the middle of the night, being half asleep and not really thinking about it, but they somehow go to the restroom, come back to bed all the time, and they aren't necessarily looking where they're going. They're doing that based off of a mental map. Within that mental map, there's kind of like these little anchor points that you can use to really kind of help you recalibrate your mental map if you need to. And orientation mobility, we refer to these as landmarks. And these can be things that whenever you're there, you find it, you know for sure that you are in a specific location. It's not going to move. It's not temporary. An example of this would be a specific office. Or if you're thinking about in your home, thinking about landmarks, like you know you're in the bedroom because you know what your bed feels like. You know you're in the kitchen because it's typically the only room in the house that has a stove or oven. That's kind of what you're looking for when it comes to landmarks. And when you're traveling around that mental map, you kind of think about how to get around from one landmark to another. Essentially, the landmarks would be the destinations a lot of times if you want to really kind of think of it in a simple concept. There's other things, though, that can help you keep your orientation while you're traveling around inside. These we typically refer to more as clues. Might kind of use them in conjunction with other clues to clue you into where you are. They can move. They're not necessarily unique. Some places they have rugs right by the doors. That rug being by the door would be a clue that you're near a door. You don't necessarily know what door you're by, but if you are following along with your mental map, then it gives you kind of a little target that you can localize in on. Clues actually don't have to actually be a physical thing either. Sometimes they can be sounds. We really like trying to make use of sounds for navigation just because it's a really transferable skill. And learning how to recognize sounds inside really helps out. And it's a good skill to develop for when you go outside. I couldn't believe it when I actually first started going through O&M, before I actually became certified to teach O&M, but actually just as a blind individual learning all my new blindness skills. there are different sounds that I never really paid attention to before. Now I can definitely tell whenever there's a hallway next to me that I'm passing or an open doorway just based off the sound of the airflow. Sound of like a vending machine. I know here at the center we have a couple of vending machines, and we definitely teach individuals coming to training here that they can use the sound of those vending machines to help them find their way around. Prior to coming to the center, one of the ways that I've worked with individuals where we've used sounds to help with orientation is for, especially for individuals who are relatively new to blindness, they haven't really had a chance to get a whole lot, receive a whole lot of training, walking around a facility and having an alarm clock or a radio that goes off, that teaching them how they can listen to the sound coming from that alarm clock or that radio to help them find their way back to a certain position in a room. Favorite spot that they like to sit in whenever they're lounging around. I know I definitely have a nice little recliner that I like. And whenever I go to a hotel and find a spot that I want to sit at, then I'll typically, for the first little bit, keep like my phone playing next to it with some music and help me keep orientation when I'm walking around. And I pay attention to not just what that sound is, but where it is in relationship to my body. As I'm walking around the room, I can notice the sound of my phone playing could be in front of me to the left, but as I move further along the wall, that sound starts getting a little bit more actually over to my left instead of being in front of me a little bit. And these could be little minute changes, but these are all skills that help out with orientation inside. Another good clue, sound-wise, I've used traveling indoors is going to doctor's appointments. Aside from my primary care physician, most of my doctors are in big complexes or in hospital buildings. The sound of elevator doors opening and closing, if they have a bell on them that rings whenever it's arrived to the floor, those are little clues that I use to help me find my way around the doctor's office. You can also use the sound of doors opening and closing to know that there's an entrance or an exit nearby. You can kind of localize in on it. And really kind of learning to take in all these sounds, it definitely takes practice. Sometimes people struggle with it a little bit more. And one of the little tricks that I like to tell people that they can use to localize in on where that sound's coming from is if they're hearing it, you can kind of try and point your nose towards the sound. Typically, you can actually get pretty accurate with it, even if you just kind of slightly move your head side to side and really try and pay attention to, is that sound a little bit to the left of my nose or a little bit to the right of my nose? And once you get your nose pointing at it, you can be really accurate on saying that's exactly the direction I got to head for that sound. There's also tactile clues that you can use when building that mental map of inside. One of the things that you can feel is the different textures of whatever you're walking on. Carpet will feel different from tile. Brick can feel different from tile. Sometimes, depending on how smoothed out they've made a brick floor inside, it can be a little bit trickier to pick up. But with practice, it's pretty easy to pick up because you'll feel it being smooth, but then you feel the bumps going between the grout between the bricks. And even then, that's, you kind of get an auditory clue with that as well, because brick will sound different, especially if you're just letting your cane tips stay in constant contact with the ground as opposed to tile. It can all be helpful. It helps in the long run with trying to problem solve where you are if you get disoriented, especially in larger buildings like doctor's offices, libraries, feeling little bumps in the carpet where if they've kind of tacked the carpet down. Those can be little clues for you to keep track of where you are in space. Movie theaters, one of the little tactile clues that you can get there if you go out to movie theaters is feeling the little bump from the little LED lights on the floor. You don't necessarily have to see them, but if you're moving your cane across them, you can actually feel those and follow them along the aisle. The mental map is definitely the key thing to really anything with orientation mobility. There are a couple of different cane techniques can vary inside. Some people definitely prefer to keep their cane on the ground and sweep it side to side. that's helpful in that it gives you a lot more tactile feedback than using two-point touch. With a constant contact, you don't necessarily get as much auditory feedback. There's many skills that you can learn to use in O&M. Every skill is not perfect 100% of the time, meaning that the most ideal skill to use is not appropriate in every situation. There's times that when you're using your cane, you want to use a little bit different technique. Typically, when I'm walking just down the hallway, I'll use something like two-point touch so I can get some nice echoes from the walls around me, getting that auditory feedback about the actual material that I'm walking on. And then there's other times inside where I may be going into a stairwell and I want to make sure I don't accidentally topple sideways off of a landing or on a step. And so I'll switch up and go to constant contact whenever I'm traveling in stairwells. Malls or airports, they have those powered walkways that you can get on, the flat escalators, even just escalators in general. And I'll typically go constant contact whenever I'm approaching those, just to really make sure I know where the steps and the moving walkway are going to start at, so I can kind of brace myself before stepping onto them. Once you kind of start developing a mental map within a building, whether it be your home or someplace you've traveled to, a grocery store, you can start working on a mental map within your mental map. When I'm walking in a building, I try to think more generalized with less detail when I'm walking through the hallways. But then when I get to the specific hallway that has the room that I'm trying to get to, it's like I kind of make a mental switch to zoom in, and then I start paying a little bit closer attention to more details. So I may not necessarily be concerned with all the doors that I'm passing when I'm walking down most hallways, but when I get to the hallway that I know my destination's on, then I may get a little bit more specific and know that the place that I'm going to would be the fourth door on the right. And so at that point, I would start paying more attention to how many doors there are. That's where, you know, I kind of metaphorically would zoom in on my map and see greater detail. It's not as spread out. Once I get to the room, then you have to kind of get familiar with the room, figure out what's there. A lot of people find this one in particular a little intimidating if it's a room they've never been to. You're doing the same thing that you're doing as you're getting to that room. You're building a mental map of that room. What I suggest people do whenever they first get into a room, make sure you're out of the doorway. So in case someone's coming in behind you or wanting to get out through the door, then you're not in their way. But if you kind of step off to the side, you can kind of pause and recalibrate your mental map, knowing that the door is basically just behind you, and just stop and listen to see what you can tell about the room. Does the room sound big? Does it sound like there's a lot of echoes in it? Is it a smaller room? Are there a lot of people in the room? Are you the only one in there? If there are people in there, where do you hear them mostly in the room? Maybe they're congregating around some sort of table or desk, which could actually be an activity depending on where you're at. And in grocery store has a big giant room. I come in, I kind of pause. Typically, I'll listen for the sound of the cash registers. Beep, beep, beep. Find my way over there to solicit assistance from the people working at the cash register. Get them to help point me in the direction of customer service so I could see about getting help with a personal shopper around a facility. Whenever walking inside, you come across different environments where sometimes it's going to be more congested, more cluttered. I do find myself using pencil grip more frequent inside than I do outside. I'll do that whenever there's a bunch of people around so that I don't have to worry about getting my cane stuck between someone's legs as they're passing by, and don't have to worry about them walking and either knocking my cane out of my hands, or if it's a folding cane, possibly snapping one of the joints and breaking my cane. You're moving slower anyway, so you don't need as much preview, and you can switch up into pencil grip. A lot of chairs and tables typically will go pencil grip to help me find my way through there with a little bit greater ease. If you stick your cane out all the way, it's going to be hard to find an open spot with that long cane sticking so far out. Try and make as few turns as possible. That definitely helps you keep your orientation a little bit more. But if you are going to turn, also try to stick to more 90 degree turns at first. That can help because you can work in the use of cardinal directions. A lot of times people say to me when I'm working with them, they're horrible at cardinal directions and they think that they would use it. Thing about cardinal directions is that they're universal, and no matter where you are or who you're talking to, you don't have to worry about getting confused between someone else's north is and what your north is, because north is still the same for anyone, whereas left and right, those are very relative. We're using words like here definitely aren't very helpful. It's over here, it's over there, and cardinal directions can definitely help out with that. Most people aren't used to using cardinal directions, so hope you get stronger with knowing your cardinal directions is using clock face directions. If you're traveling an analog clock, you know, right in front of you is 12 o'clock, to your right is 3, 6 o'clock's right behind you, and 9 o'clock's to your left. It's not always going to be foolproof. Sometimes people are still going to give you clock face directions based off of the way that they're facing, that it is your 12 o'clock, your 3 o'clock, your 9 o'clock. And that's one of the strategies for keeping your orientation or getting directions as you're traveling around in different buildings. When it comes to traveling indoor, that would really be the main stuff, like in a nutshell, that I think of building that mental map with the use of landmarks and clues, making use of your other senses, hearing, smell, touch, that tactile feedback that you get from a cane. If anyone in here is interested in getting a dog guide or has a dog guide, you still get tactile feedback from using a dog as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be a cane to get tactile feedback. You do lose a lot of tactile feedback if you travel with a dog. You still get tactile feedback through your feet, and then you get tactile feedback through the dog's harness and their behavior cues that they give you, north, south, east, west. Clock face directions. Even if you get lost inside, you kind of gain your orientation back. Does anyone have any questions?
Miss Ruth, I have a question, Drew.
Yeah.
This is really interesting. I like the mythical land of over there. I have a question about mental maps and getting older. Is mm-hmm. it harder to recalibrate as we get older? Because I find that if I move a piece of furniture, it takes me a while to get used to it being there, and I put it there. Does it take us a little longer to recalibrate our mental maps?
I don't really think it has so much to do with age, forcing your brain to recalibrate. That's one of the trickiest things.
That's helpful for us who are seniors. I thought it was, I really felt it was, must be that I'm getting older because I put the table there. I moved it. So I'm thinking, should I move the table back? Or you think yeah. I should just keep trying to recalibrate?
No, keep trying.
So you're trying to get them to say from your vantage point mm-hmm. what it is on the clock face. How do you say that without being like, no, I'm talking about me. Don't tell me about you. How can you convey that in a tactful way?
Even with the clock face, is I'll gesture with my hand where mm-hmm. I'm interpreting. That serves as kind of like a physical prompt, but also kind of like a quality control checkpoint on the directions you're getting to make sure that what they're telling you matches up with what you're interpreting.
Right.
The other thing is, especially if you're facing them, that's where we really tell the students to really make that, quote, eye contact, although you can't see them. Or some people would say face contact. When they turn their, when you say where is such, and they turn their head, you can hear their voice shift from center to left or right.
Right.
And then if you pay attention to that, and then, like Drew says, you point the direction you think that they're talking about, or it sounds like they're talking about, to confirm.
So we're getting clues and giving clues to them too, so they
exactly
know what we need. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good. So it's advocating for yourself.
In general, I found when asking people for directions on that, most people tend to be pretty nice whenever you're asking questions like that.
So Jean was first, then Bernie, and the person with iPhone. So Jean?
This is Jean Park, and thank you very much. There was one thing I was going to share that really helped me. We, 2 years ago, moved from a single level patio home and moved into a high rise senior community. What helped me is my husband went down to the planning office here and got a large map of the main floor blown up. And he took little tape and went around the perimeter of all the walls and then left openings where there were doors. And I sat with that map on my table and studied it, feeling it over and over and over until I realized what I had done, because I couldn't understand why I was turning the wrong way all the time. And it was, I had to recalibrate my mental map. You know, if there's any way you have somebody that can help you with some sort of tactile, an unusual building, and you need to be able to manipulate and maneuver in it. That's some sort of a mapping, just physically to feel it. That's what really helped me.
That whole tactile map, that definitely can help supplement and help strengthen the mental maps. You can use all sorts of stuff to make a mental map. You could even just lay some stuff out on a table, get different items to represent different landmarks.
We're on a university campus, and some architecture students came up with that idea, only they were going to do the map for the whole campus. This is a campus with 80,000 students.
Bernie, you're next.
You mentioned the gym, and I was actually at the gym last night, and I was actually at a different gym than I normally go to. Because I was at a different gym, I was swimming, and I was forced to swim in a middle lane as a blind person. But how do you swim in a straight line?
One of the things that people will do for blind swimmers, even in like competition, is, you know, they have the little lane markers. Sometimes people will trail along there even before they start swimming laps, going along the lane markers there to feel the rope stretching across. You could start off with like a warm-up lap, get the motion down to make sure you're definitely, you know, not drifting side to side of the lane. Just lightly, you know, brush that lane marker with the side of your arm. If you had like a waterproof speaker that you could put down at the far end of the lane, you could use that kind of as an auditory clue to target for your direction.
How do you go to a gym? I mean, I can't use half the equipment independently. I mean, it's all digitalized.
I don't necessarily ask for permission. I just bring bump dots with me. I'll solicit assistance from someone at the check-in desk or someone walking around. Yeah, I'll actually bring markers. And then if I have marked a piece of equipment, then what I'll do is I'll try and find that piece of equipment the next time as well. But I also just carry them with me. Once I get set up on it, like say the treadmill, I'll have someone friendly volunteer that passed by that I solicited assistance from, or someone from the front desk. I'll have them help me mark the quick start, the speed, and the incline.
Okay, and you don't find that people take them off?
They will occasionally. That's why I also carry them with me to put them back on. Cardio equipment gets taken up quite quickly, depending on what time of day you go. I carry it there. So if nothing else, I can get someone to help me set it up before I start using the equipment. And then I can control what I want to do on that.
The other thing you could do is actually go to one of the managers of the gym, let them know that you want to mark the equipment, and then let them mark it.
I started off putting lock dots that you would put on like a keyboard on there. I found when I was working out, it was really kind of hard to find that tiny little dot. And then I went up to the micro bump dots. Those were a lot easier to fall off, but I could find them a little bit easier. The only time I ever use the large bump dots is actually on the cardio equipment. They have better sticking power to the machines, and it's easier for me to find when I'm, you know, getting tired because I'm pushing myself on the equipment. Since I can't see anything at all, what I typically try to do to make people less inclined to want to try and take them off is I definitely try to stick with getting the clear large bump dots.
Is there any like protocols for blind people when there's like an emergency situation, weather emergency, you know, fire, or even like an active shooter? I work for the federal government. I just have to take these courses, and there's actually nothing available if you're a disabled person.
Ms. Ruth, with I don't know if this is in every state. In New Jersey, we have Register Ready for the disabled, and you sign up. And the only thing that would do really is to tell fire and police personnel that you're disabled. So if there's an evacuation to a shelter kind of emergency, you'd be priority. But I'm not sure if that's in every state.
Just dial 211 and see what kind of information you get.
We definitely teach all these different strategies and skills. The way that's going to be most effective is if you figure out the way that works best for you to understand. And there's more than one way to do everything that we've talked about here today.
Is there any type of education on how to read a tactile map? I don't seem to be able to pick up on that easily.
There's not necessarily a whole lot of written material on how to use tactile maps. There's different resources that we receive when we go through training to become ONMs that suggest different learning strategies that we can use with people when teaching tactile maps. There's some people that can't spatially pick up the information that's on a tactile map. It's a tool. It's not the only tool out there. I find a lot of people tend to find a lot of success if they kind of spread their hands out and just feel where's all the information kind of clustered at. And then from there, you can kind of start going into some braille skills there where you start tracking lines and using both hands to kind of scan the entire map. Ultimately, once you kind of get familiar with that, then you start getting a little bit more dynamic and trying to find the actual hallways and doors and tracing that way. While you're working with that tactile map, trying to think about it in shapes, like we talk about L-shaped routes, a route where it has one turn somewhere along the line, or a Z-shaped route where it has two turns in different directions, a U-shaped route. Thinking about routes and terminology like that can help.
Sometimes with the tactile maps, depending on how they're made, they call it it's a busy map. And that just means that it's got so much stuff on it that you can't distinguish one thing from another. If the map you have has Braille on it, sit down at the end of it, start with your hands together and actually move your hands out to the side, following whatever line it is, and then going away from you or starting at the top and just kind of scanning back left and right or up and down to kind of get a pattern of what maybe it may feel like.
One of the things I see people do a lot of times is if you have a tactile map and someone's trying to show you a specific route on the tactile map after you've finished exploring it, is a lot of people will actually try and grab your hand and like guide your hand around. Studies have actually shown that one of the better ways for people to pick up and understand what's going on with that is if someone's going to guide your hand along the route, have them just place their hand underneath yours so your hand's on top of theirs, and they can guide where your hand's going with their hand underneath yours. There have actually been multiple studies that have shown that that tends to be a little bit more effective than actually just having someone grab like the top of your hand.
This is June. I'm from Delaware. When I ask someone, a sighted individual, you know, like to the left or to the right, am I going the right direction? They would turn my whole body. You know, they would turn me into the direction. Or they will actually, you know, with my cane, take it, you know, not out of my hand, but just move it, you know, to the direction where I'm trying to go. I know that's not correct, but how do I get them, you know, to, you know, don't do that?
It's one of those situations, again, self-advocating is going to come into play. I do tell people all the time, you got your honey and you got your vinegar, and you definitely catch more flies with honey than vinegar, but, you know, vinegar is useful at times too.
Keep your feet planted. If you don't want them to move you, don't let them move you. And if you don't want them to move your cane, don't let them move your cane. And it's not like like you're being mean. It's just like, okay, no, don't do that. Just give me the information that I need. And then you help them give you that information by pointing the direction you think.
June, this is Judy. People think they're helping, but what you need to do is to hold on to the cane tight and say, stop. Tell me what you want me to do. And that will get their attention. And then smile. Smiling as you're telling them off.
One of the perks that I love about these NFB rigid canes is I can put both hands on it and just slam it back down.
Eleanor, you have your hand raised.
I just moved into a senior building. I went to do my laundry. Now, they didn't give me orientation. And this lady flew out of her apartment. And I'm on the phone with Be My Eyes, and she went ballistic. And here this volunteer, you know, listening to this woman berate me. You've never seen people like you. What are you doing here? How did you get here? Grabs my hand. Don't touch me. You're in my personal space. But ever since that day, every time she sees me, like try to go to the laundry room, she's right on my back. And I don't feel comfortable and I don't like it. So how do you address that? You just say, go away. You know, and if I need help, I'm strong enough and big enough to ask for help.
Maybe talk to the manager. The manager, because she's actually assaulting you in some way.
Yeah.
She's grabbing you.
During the hour after this one, if you want, we can go back to that. There is no perfect solution in life. And, you know, we're all going to run into things. And after it's over, we're going to think all of the things we could have said. We're done.